Hello, everyone. How are you guys doing out there today? I see people from all over the place out there, and I just want to welcome everyone. My name is Dave Lucas, CEO of TaxPlan IQ. I'm excited to be joined by my co-host and founder of TaxPlan IQ, Jackie Meyer. And based upon the response to this event, with almost 2,000 signing up over the last few weeks, I'd say you guys are all pretty excited as well for us to unpack the One Big Beautiful Bill. Our team has done a great job and really burned the midnight oil over the last 10, 15 days to really rip this act apart and figure out the most important changes in the law that you should know to maximize the impact of your clients. And as we will see as we go through this today, one thing that I want you to think about most is that these changes equal massive opportunity, right? Massive opportunity to help your clients, proactively serve them, and for users of TaxPlan IQ and tax planners alike, massive opportunity for increased revenue to your top and bottom line. But before we dive in, a little housekeeping first. Can everyone see and hear me okay? So you can put some emojis, drop something in the chat. I just want to make sure everybody can see and hear me okay. There we go. Awesome. Excellent. Great. Thank you so much, guys. We're going to aim for about 40, 45 minutes of content today, maybe a little bit more. We've made this an hour and a half just to make sure we get enough time for all the questions and all that, right? We also have a few special surprises for you. So make sure you do stay towards the end to see those. And we're probably gonna, take that time. We're gonna go to that hour and a half time frame. So be prepared for that. It'll be completely worth your while. Believe me, I'm gonna ask you that at the end. I guarantee you're gonna say yes. As we go, though, if you have any questions at all, please do not hesitate to ask them, but make sure to use the Q&A box in your console, okay? If you put them in the chat, we may not see them, we may miss them. So use the Q&A box that's on the Zoom console that you have, on your management bar there. We're going to do our best to answer all those questions as we go through from the Q&A, right? So, and we'll stay over on time if we need to answer questions live at the end. I'm also going to be doing a short product demo near the end, and I'm going to show how that technology can help you implement these new strategies and really capitalize on this massive opportunity that's right at your fingertips. But before we jump into all that, if you are new to TaxPlan IQ, it's your first time with us, welcome. I have the privilege to introduce you to Dr. Jackie Meyer. Jackie's a CPA and she's the founder of TaxPlan IQ with extensive experience in tax advisory and planning. She's been at the forefront of helping tax professionals move beyond compliance to strategic advisory work for many years, over a decade. Jackie and our team have combed through this 870-page legislation, so you don't have to. And she's going to break down the key provisions, the action items for all of us. And I have to add that specifically to this legislation, Jackie's really been at the forefront of educating accountants on its impact. In 2018, when the original Tax Jobs and or Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was signed into law, her speaking drew more than 10,000 attendees at a time, making her really the go-to voice for practical ROI-driven guidance. So, Jackie, it is so great to have you leading today's session. I love doing this with you, and I'm going to turn it over to you to get started.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dave. Hello, everybody. I'm gonna take over the screen. Can y'all give me reactions? Can you see my agenda? Let me know if everyone can see my agenda. Awesome. Okay. So thank you so much for being here today. Thank you, Dave, for that great intro. I am so glad you're here, especially if you had any troubles getting into last week's event. Our Zoom meeting capped out. We are so sorry for that, but we are so glad to see you today. And this is the kind of stuff that us tax nerds can really geek out on. So we're going to break down what sounds kind of like a joke or Star Wars reference. I call it the 1B3 bill. So the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I know it's kind of crazy, but it's real. Such is life, right? Behind it is mostly TCJA extensions, but there are some really odd little niched nuances and provisions that honestly I'm still working through and, working through in my head. So let's all work as a team together today. I'm going to go straight through so that we get through all the stuff I want to make sure and talk about. But as Dave said, put your tax questions in the Q&A. And while he switches over at the end to TaxOne IQ, shows you how we can greatly improve your lives with it, I will be ferociously answering the Q&A in the background alongside the other CPAs on my team that are here, Madeline James, who is the head of our sales, and Veronica Herrera, who's the head of our growth team. So very happy to have them. If you've deep dived into these provisions or even read a lot about one thing and you happen to know something that maybe I don't even know yet, please do share that. Share it in the chat with everybody or share it in the Q&A for a clarification, and then we can follow up at the end for that. Now, if you have been following me since 2018, I was super excited to be on the forefront of TCJA. I thought that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and now I get two. So instead of looking at this as, oh man, roll my eyes, more work for us, we've got the attention of the taxpayers. We've got the attention of the world right now on tax planning. This is the time. This is your opportunity to shine. And so I'm really excited to help you through that. So I'll walk you through the most impactful changes for both individuals and businesses. We'll talk about how to use those changes to give your clients a major ROI very briefly at the end. How do you price this stuff? How do you price tax planning, even if you've been giving it away for free? You'll get a couple priority cheat sheets based on client income levels, so you know exactly where to focus first. And surprise, we actually didn't create this session to show you TaxOne IQ, but we've gotten so many requests over the last couple weeks. We are incorporating that in at the end, and we have a special offer just for y'all as well. So we'll wrap up with a little bit of live Q&A as needed. We did extend the session to an hour and a half, as Dave said, and we have a nice special offer for you. So who's ready? Let's get going. Y'all ready for this? Now, I'm going to kick off a little different than we did last week because the number one question I've been asked is, who does this impact the best and why? Like, is this really helping the top 1% of taxpayers? Is this helping lower income? Well, let's talk about that. And I'll show you a LinkedIn post that I did just yesterday or day before. It all runs together. I just got back from Bridging the Gap, by the way. Anyone else? Show me reactions. It was amazing. Got to talk about burnout. Honestly, I'm a little bit on a low today. Dave is too, because we're both traveling for different accounting events. But I just got home and I'm excited to be with y'all. So before I show you who this tax bill benefits the most, I do want to correct one thing that happened after last week's webinar. Someone at the end of the webinar asked in the Q&A and they were like, hey, I'm pretty sure that bonus depreciation doesn't impact QBI because it's now based on EBITDA. And I fell for it and I ran with it and we even sent out a correction to everybody and then I deep dived and that is not true. So we will talk about bonus and QBI momentarily. We will deep dive into the new provisions, but I do want to correct myself. QBI is based on taxable income. It always has been since TCJA came out and it always will be. So bonus depreciation and those things do impact and lower your QBI. Okay, so who benefits from this thing? Well, I was pretty much wrong that it helps just the wealthy. Our data kind of tells a different story. So our biggest losers, sorry, are our 500K and uppers. Pretty much the 500K to like 15 mil. They're hit with this 237th itemized deduction cap, which essentially raises their federal tax rate by 2%. That's the easiest way to remember it. Their SALT benefits phase down from 40K to 10K, which essentially raises their federal tax rate another like 5%. We'll see the math of that as we go. Their audit risk is going to be the worst, especially our standardized form filers, because AI and automation is going into IRS systems and they're going to catch W-2 filer problems and things that they can match, right? The surprise winners are really the 200 to 500K earners. They get that full 40K SALT deduction. They get to really like capitalize on all the business strategies. Our QBI phase outs are higher, and so you can typically get people into them, and there's some credit stacking opportunities as well. Minimal impact, I think, on lower income, although, I mean, who could say that, because $1,000, $2,000 could be a huge impact on someone that's struggling, right? but they get the baseline credit still. They're probably not going to benefit much from the itemized deduction changes, and there's limited planning opportunities as always. Now, the plot twist is our 15 mil plus net worth. We've got the estate plan that's unaffected, really. We haven't reduced the estate tax exemption. So there's all kinds of advanced estate and tax planning strategies that can be preserved and wealth transfer tools that are intact there. So the government found their perfect squeeze, too successful for sympathy, but not wealthy enough to for those escape routes. Poor guys and gals. Okay, so let's dive into our business provisions. Y'all ready? We can add like thousands, if not tens of thousands, to your client's bottom line here. And I wanna make sure y'all can see my bonus depreciation slide. How's everyone doing out there? Give me a reaction, give me a reaction. Jackie needs reactions. There they are. Okay. It's so delayed. I'm like, I need instantaneous gratification. All right. Bonus depreciation is now made permanent at 100%. And that is huge. It means your clients can expense the full cost of qualifying business assets right away, indefinitely now. This is a permanent provision. Now, side note on permanent provisions, they tend to be during the current, you know, presidential election, right? So we don't know what will happen 3 years plus from now. It could completely change, but right now it is, as of today, permanent. So that does include used property, which wasn't always the case in the past. Make a note of that. This is a massive cash flow boost and planning opportunity for high income clients, especially those buying equipment, vehicles, or certain improvements. So how does this really work? Well, there's some weird dates throughout all these provisions. And by the way, Treasury still has to finalize and interpret this tax code. So we'll be seeing a lot more clarification and, you know, IRS notes and whatnot. Although I did just see Kelly Phillips Erb in session at Bridging the Gap. And she reminded us that we have almost 30,000 IRS employees that are gone. And that is impacting Treasury, IRS, their media relations. So she's expecting a lot slower updates. And Gail Perry noted that this next tax season, prepare for it to be your worst yet because of these extreme delays we might get, even though the tax bill passed so early in the year. So be careful, y'all. It's going to be a crazy up and down. Plan for that, though. Plan for emergencies. Plan for fires. Block at least 5 hours a week on your calendar towards new education, new knowledge, putting out those fires. And then it's not putting out fires. It's actually proactive because you were expecting it, right? I love time blocking and definitely recommend it for y'all. Okay, so what happens if someone made a big equipment purchase right before January 19th, 2025. So 1-1 to January 18th, they're locked into the old provision, which was 40% bonus in 2025. But if they waited even a couple weeks and then placed it in service, right? So in service is actually the date that matters, not necessarily the purchase date. Place it in service January 19th, 2025 or later. Boom, they get the full 100%. Boom, right? Full write-off. So that means timing 1,000% matters here. Modeling this stuff out is more important than ever. Okay, so let's talk about some planning ideas here. My slides are going so slow. I think it's about the same pace as my brain today. Okay. All right, we talked about that, and here we go. Okay, five real-world ways to use this change for serious ROI. One, accelerate asset purchases. If your client's planning to buy equipment, vehicles, or upgrades, you might want to move those up, right? The deduction gives them that real-time tax savings. It even could impact their current quarter estimate. And you're not actually talking about just deferrals. There's ways to move this into more permanent planning if the timing's right with their estate. So I'll mention that in just a moment. Number two, rethink QBI strategy. Bonus depreciation does lower taxable income, which sounds great, but if that income is QBI eligible, it might reduce or even eliminate the 20% pass-through deduction. Run both options, run a median option, right? Don't guess. Play the numbers, see which one really gives you the net bottom line best net effective tax rate effect, and go from there. Number three, smooth income for bracket planning. If you've got clients with roller coaster type years, bonus depreciation is your lever to flatten those spikes out. Keep them in lower brackets and create consistency, right, year to year. And then number four, compare with Section 179. People overlook this all the time. Yes, Section 179 is flexible, but it's capped now at 2.5 mil with phase out starting at 4 mil. Bonus depreciation is unlimited for most clients. So you want to compare both. Don't assume. And we know that Section 179 has limits around it being having taxable income and things like that. So check those boxes, right? In your tax prep software, check those boxes, play around with it, see what that bottom line impact is. It takes 5 seconds to flip screens and make sure that you're doing the right thing, the optimal thing for your clients in their projections. And then number five, watch for recapture on sales. This is what many miss. That upfront deduction, if they sell the asset later, it's recaptured typically as ordinary income. So yes, use bonus depreciation, but time it with any very close upcoming sales in mind so that there's no nasty surprises or the net effect really doesn't make sense. On to the next slide. Slowly, slowly. Goodness gracious. Okay. Now, two bonus level strategies most folks skip. One is state conformity, and this is going to be a common theme throughout pretty much every topic we talk about today. Not all states follow federal rules, right? Especially for federal bonus rules. California, New York, North Carolina, they have their own rules. I think there's a couple others. Pop it in the chat if you know them. If you're not checking this, you're risking audits or state tax surprises, and so you always want to look for that conformity. And then here's the bonus power move, which is going to be affect a very niche amount of people, but it's also good. It's still good to state. Succession or estate planning. This is your power move. So lowering taxable income with bonus depreciation can also reduce a business's valuation. Well, why would I want a business valued at less? Well, it could be a lower estate or gift tax exposure. So it's perfect for clients that are gifting ownership, prepping for a sale, or setting up legacy plans if things do get impacted by bonus depreciation after kind of, you know, EBITDA type stuff. So quick lightning round of a few things before we move on. Used assets, gently used truck, etc. Yes, those count. Luxury vehicle limits still apply. So you can't do that Maserati. You know who I'm looking at. I know a lot of you out there. No, I'm just kidding. We're so practical, aren't we? But it's not fully deductible, right? So the luxury vehicle limits do still apply. Leasehold improvements often qualify, especially in medical, restaurant, and retail. And then cost segregation studies, I'm a huge fan of, and I still think they're critical. Even with 100% bonus, a good study maximizes real estate, what gets written off and when, accelerates things down into the 15-year and lower categories to get the 100%. There's also ways actually to directly expense some of those items up front. And so, you know, when you're talking to, the vendors out there that are doing the cost seg studies, ask them about that because then you don't have to recapture anything. Bottom line, bonus depreciation's back and better than ever. Let's keep rolling on since it takes my screen a second. Here we go. Two, the gift we weren't necessarily expecting, but we are absolutely celebrating, right? QBI is permanent. The 20% deduction under Section 199A is officially here to stay. For now, of course, right? The caveat that I gave you earlier. No more looming sunsets, no more kicking the can down the road. It is locked in. And it gets better. The phase out thresholds have increased by $75,000 for single filers and $150,000 for joint filers. That means more small business clients, especially your Schedule C's and S-corps can benefit without having to jump through as many hoops. And there is now what I think is the, I'm just going to say it, the dumbest provision in the new bill that's going to waste some time and really doesn't matter. There's a floor level deduction of $400 for low income earners for QBI. They have to be material participants. So be careful when you're reading the bill, if you ever get to that point. Hopefully you can skip a lot of it because of today. It has a note about material participation. And I was like, oh my gosh, are they making QBI non-passive for everybody now? Do they have to be a non-passive participant? And no, it's just for this silly little kind of standard QBI deduction. Let's dive into that in just a minute. But I want to show you the exact 2025 phase outs. Okay. And then the notes on your SSTBs and that kind of stuff, none of that changed otherwise. I'm sorry. We didn't get that provision for SSTBs to get more of a deduction. Oopsie. What are our planning ideas here? Number one, obvious, right? But so imperative. Revisit entity structure. This is the moment to ask, should my client stay a sole proprietor, partnership, S-corp? Is it time to rethink that? For a lot of high income earners, that 20% deduction still beats the flat 21% C-corp rate. Remember how the C-corp rate was taken down to kind of help offset the QBI provision for pass-throughs? But if your client has multiple entity structures and they are going well above, you know, potentially into the top 37% tax bracket, you could use both. I love using all kinds of different entity structures when they have more complex situations and utilizing the fringe benefits that can come along with it and other things that you can capitalize on each type of business. But yeah, the pass-through stuff, the QBI is probably going to be more beneficial, especially if paired with strategies like family payroll or stacked retirement plans. It's definitely not one size fit all, but it's good stuff to look at. Number two, use the new phase out room. So we've got a little more breathing room now with a phase out starting around $272K for single and $544K for married filing joint. That's quite the jump, right? You can get strategic with income timing here, year-end shifts, and adjusted distributions. And number three, yes, the new $400 minimum deduction exists. This one's for your gig workers, part-timers, side hustlers. Here's how it works. If they have at least $1,000 of material participating QBI, they automatically qualify for a $400 deduction, but only if their calculated 20% QBI deduction is less than that. So if they have $100 in taxable income, they still get the 20 bucks QBI. What if they have $500 of qualified business income? Well, it's too low for this standard amount, but they'll get the $100 QBI deduction. If they get $1,000 in qualified business income times 20%, that's $200. That's where they get the biggest bump up. So it's an extra 200 bucks to get the 400. That's where it's just like, why did they do this to us? Cause we're going to have to be like double checking these, or maybe you just, well, yeah, hopefully there's going to be a check the box in our tax prep softwares that are like optimize this, right? So you don't even have to worry about it. But then we've got, if you have $3,000 of qualified business income, 20% of that is 600. So you just take that. You don't need the minimum because you've already exceeded it. The IRS says this is to simplify things for our side hustle economy. Bless their hearts, right? Because what we really needed less of was more obscure stuff and triple checking rules, in my humble opinion. All right, number four, coordinate with bonus depreciation and Section 179. This one's about balance, right? So those large deductions can eat into QBI. Before expensing everything in sight, pause, model whether QBI, keeping it, is more beneficial. Sometimes it creates more value long-term than wiping out income in the existing year. And then number five, adjust estimated payments and withholding. Many clients thought QBI would be expiring in 2026, and now it's not, right? So just make sure that any projections you're doing into this and next year. You're including these new tax provisions. We really shouldn't see a lot of tax increases for anybody unless they're that unfortunate 500 to 550Kers and up. So sad. What not to overlook here? Well, these are things that even seasoned pros tend to miss. REITs and PTPs still qualify, so watch those K-1s. W-2 wage and unadjusted basis tests still apply to our SSTBs. Rental real estate may still qualify under Safe Harbor, but only if properly documented. And state conformity varies. Shocker, right? Next is what I like to call the most misunderstood, underused, absolutely powerful tax provision out there, Section 1202, or Qualified Small Business Stock, QSBS. Who uses this or has used this? Who loves it? Give me reactions. I need some audience interaction here. Y'all still awake? Y'all still alive? Okay, awesome. Most advisors skip this. They think it's just for tech bros and startups. But no, this can apply to your dentist, your HVAC company owner, or even your own firm if you keep it out of this excluded service business category, which is kind of like our IRS blacklist. Now, it's very similar to the SSTB list. It is not exactly the same. So be careful, okay? In TaxPlan IQ, we have all the rules listed. We show you exactly which industries are available and categorized and whatnot. So if you are a user, go check out the strategy library and make sure and read about that. So here's what's cool though. We now have, instead of a $10 million cap gain exclusion on up to 100% of your capital gains, it is now $15 million. And instead of 10 times your basis in the stock being the max, it's 15 times the basis, and it's whichever is higher. There's also now partial exclusions available. So if someone issues qualified small business stock after July 4th, 2025, Independence Day, remember that, right? You can have a partial exclusion. So 3 years from today, if you issued today, you get a prorated 50% cap gain exclusion, right? So 50% of the 15, up to the 15 mil. And 4 years gets 75%, 5 years gets 100%. Now here's the sad news, y'all. If the issuance happened prior to July 4th, 2025, you are on the grandfathered plan, the full 5 years have to count. You have no proration, and there's really nothing you can do about it. Because if you're selling, tomorrow, there's just no way you can probably defer things for another 3 years. But hey, at least there's $10 million of tax-free cap gains. Also, the gross assets cap got bumped from $50 million of balance sheet assets to qualify for this under 50 mil to under 75 mil. So it opens the back door for bigger scaling companies, which is pretty cool. All right, so we talked about when you issue, how to get the proration, et cetera. Hopefully that makes sense for y'all because it is really imperative to go back and look at those dates. Bottom line, this is where y'all can really shine as advisors. QSBS isn't just a line in the code. It's a strategic lever to build, preserve, transfer wealth. It's literally just you marking something as not taxable on the tax return. The rules are pretty darn simple. You just have to make sure that the client qualifies. So ask the right questions. Ask the 3 to 4 questions that you need to know to do that. Value price where appropriate. And start that clock now to set up right for 3, 4, 5 years plus down the line. Okay, let's see. We're good to go on that. We talked about timing. Ooh, stacking. Okay. So you can actually stack these QSBS gains, and you could do this in the past. You can do it moving forward. You can gift shares to others or gift them into trusts, gift them into charitable remainder trusts, and each entity, so to speak, gets its own exclusion. Okay, so let's say you have a $30 million cap gain that you're looking to wipe out for a client. Make sure that if they're under the old provisions, you know, 10 mil is them personally, maybe 10 mil they gift before any kind of sale or acquisition or whatnot, before the LOI actually is when you're supposed to do it, to spouse, children, non-grantor trusts. There's a little bit of weird area there as to whether spouses count as one. And so, you know, working with the appropriate vendors out there, there's a lot that specialize in this. We have one in particular that we love, but they'll help you with the stacking and make sure that people can layer the 10 plus 10 plus 10 or 15 plus 15 in different types of entities. It's a wonderful little legal loophole that you want to definitely capitalize on. So eligibility, are they really a C Corp? Was the stock issued in the appropriate dates for the appropriate amount of exclusion? And are gross assets on their balance sheet under 75 mil? And one question off, you'll lose the entire thing. So just be careful with this one, but please, please, please ask. Go back and amend. Some people just don't even know about this provision. Go back and amend returns. Ask your clients now if in the past, you know, 3 years or something that they've sold qualified small business stock and describe what it is. And then have that discussion with them and go from there to help them out, amend, and get them some taxes back. Okay, last but not least, state conformity is still a buzzkill. So not every state does recognize QSBS. Double check that. And let's move right along. Let's shift into another very powerful change, one that's long overdue for our very innovation-focused economy. I actually saw some drastic results on the tech economy over the last few years. You know, it feels like everything's just growing, growing, growing. But there were layoffs. There were tons of layoffs. And a lot of that had to do partially with tax provisions, which is the fact that R&D could not be expensed, but had to be amortized. And that was a huge hit for people, right? When they came out with that a couple years ago. So what's cool? Well, domestic R&D costs incurred after December 31st, 2024 can finally be fully expensed again. So you can get the R&D credit and the deduction. No more forced five-year amortization. And for qualifying small businesses, there's a retroactive relief available all the way back to 2022. So this is another thing you might want to amend for. Gosh, I would start a little organizer. For my team, we should add this. We have an ebook that's coming out with way more details about this based on last week's session. Everyone is really excited about it. Who wants an ebook to go along with this? Anybody? Does that sound good? Yeah, I thought so. So we could also add in a kind of amendment organizer, right? So we can ask about not only R&D, but also ask about the Section 1202. So there's some cool stuff we could do there. Now, let's clarify. If your client spends $200K in R&D in 2024, right now without, you know, expanded provisions in law from Treasury as to how we deal with this, they are still technically under the old law. So 2024, it does have to be amortized. But if they just waited a few more months to do it into January 2025 or later, it's automatically the full R&D expense again. So how do you translate that? Well, it's silly to be like, okay, I'm going to file 2024 with amortization and then amend to get the expense. We don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but I would just use your best judgment. Also, be careful because if a client didn't claim R&D credit from 2022 forward, it could be a big audit red flag if they're amending to claim it now. Because technically, they were always supposed to amortize R&D, right? So you want to weigh those pros and cons, talk about those benefits and detractors with the client, and let them decide, you know, where they stand on that. But if people are able to somehow delay between 2024 to 2025 R&D, you fix some potential amendment problems. All right, now here's the nuance. If your client qualifies as a small business, they get that retroactive relief to 2022. What is a small business? Well, there's these rumors going around on the internet and social and TikTok that it's 5 million of gross sales and under. That is not correct. That is to qualify for a payroll application of the R&D credit. 31 million in average annual gross receipts qualifies them as a small business to go back and amend and deduct R&D expenses immediately. 31 million. So that is a very big difference, right? And we talked about our other amendment triggers and red flags, so we're good to go there. What about that 5 million figure? Well, it's actually related to the payroll tax offsets under the startup R&D credit. So startups under 5 mil and less than 5 years old can use Section 41 R&D credit to offset up to 500K of payroll taxes. That is different from Section 174 expense rules and the 31 million amendment threshold. So keep both numbers in your head, but don't mix them up. All right, so we talked about pushing borderline R&D into 2025 when possible and forward. Consider those amendments. We can add that to our new amendment organizer checklist and be smart about that credit versus deduction conversation. Sometimes, things can backfire on you. Foreign R&D, sorry, you're still under the 15-year amortization. This is for domestic only and document everything. Other business provisions, and then we're going to dive into individual. Remember, this is not every single provision in the new 1B3 tax bill. Thank you, Obi-Wan. These are the things I wanted to stress because I think they're going to be the biggest impact to our small business and individual clients. So we talked about our Section 179 limit raising to 2.5 million deduction with a phase out of 4 mil. Both amounts will be indexed for inflation beginning 2025, ensuring more capital investments are eligible for immediate expensing. The business interest limit reverted. So what's good here is that we are reverting to pre-2022 rules limiting interest deduction to 30% of EBITDA, not EBIT. I hate saying EBITDA and EBIT. EBIT, it's so hard to say for me. So we're doing 30% of EBITDA with revised income ordering and foreign income exclusions clarified. And then the excess business loss rules are made permanent. The cap on excess business losses for non-corporate taxpayers is now permanent, continuing to limit deductions in high loss years. Losses above the cap will carry forward under net operating loss rules. And then this is, I maybe shouldn't have even included this because it's so niche down, but just a side note, the GILTI, GILTI, is that what, are y'all gonna call it the GILTI? The Global Intangible Low Taxed Income has been rebranded with a new name, NCTI, Net CFC Tested Income. Okay, what is this? Well, starting in 2026, the tax break called the Section 250 deduction you get on that income is getting smaller. So it drops from 50 to 40%, which means your clients could be paying more US tax on foreign earnings. The good news, the foreign taxes your clients pay overseas are now 90% creditable towards US tax bill, up from 80%. But, and big but, state tax rules don't always match the federal ones, so plan ahead on that. And just heads up on expand what's included as foreign income under these new rules, so it might catch some of your clients off guard. All right, that is our business provisions. And I went longer than last time. Dang it. Well, good thing we expanded this to an hour and a half. There's just so much to talk about, y'all. Was that helpful? How are y'all feeling so far? Give me reactions. Let me know if I'm going too fast, too slow. I think we're doing all right. Yep, there's a lot to pack in. You'll get the recording after. It'll be great. So thank y'all so much. I appreciate the love. I don't have a slide for this, but it's important. Electric vehicle credits are phasing out as soon as September 2025. So have clients buy electric vehicles before that cutoff date is over. and they will still get it. Otherwise, the new bill is pretty much phasing out all of our solar and energy credits. We saw that Trump is now refocusing on fossil fuels. Oh, and by the way, side note here, I was reading about the social impact of tax law. And it is so interesting how the government can mold and control the way that we do things. I mean, think about your clients that maybe formed businesses around some of these credits that are going to be phased out or completely eliminated. You're going to have to revisit those, and maybe they're going to have to shift gears quite a bit. Another industry that I had no idea was impacted, gun silencers, okay? This is a $2 billion industry. There was a federal excise tax of, I think, $200 or $400 on silencers that was removed in this bill. So that's actually going to help that industry. You know, not to get into the details of whether that's good or bad, but there's going to be a lot of shifts in industry changes and social policy and how this impacts America. So it's really, really interesting. Okay, let's talk about one of my favorite individual resurrected from the dead tax tools, qualified opportunity zones. Most accountants kind of wrote these off after 2021. They weren't that beneficial anymore. It was cool while it lasted, right? Well, under our big, beautiful bill, QOZs are back and better than ever. So this is huge for real estate investors, business owners sitting on recent or upcoming capital gains, any kind of capital gain. So if you've been sleeping on these, it's time to wake up, caffeinate. This strategy really got a massive reboot, but you do need to understand dates because dates matter a lot. It doesn't necessarily help you this year, but we'll see how the upcoming years are going to change, and we'll have kind of a new QOZ opportunities every 10 years. All right. So what does QOZ do? Well, it defers and then partially eliminates capital gains when you reinvest your client's cap gains into our qualified opportunity funds. These are lower income labeled zip codes that you can look up online. Just Google it quickly and you'll find those areas if they qualified. There were partnerships that formed all around this and investing in this. That part has not changed, but what has changed is our timeline. So these are now permanent. Starting though in 2027, states can redesignate qualified opportunity zones every 10 years. So let's say a client sells an asset on January 10th, 2027 and triggers a capital gain. They have that 180-day reinvestment window, which still applies, to then reinvest that gain into a qualified opportunity fund, a QOF, by roughly, what, July 2027 to qualify. That's consistent. What's new is that the new QOZ investments defer gain for up to 5 years. But here's the nuance. The investment window isn't longer. So the deferral period is. There's a big difference there. Now, the juicy part. If your client holds the investment at least 5 years, they get a 10% step up in basis. So that reduces the original deferred gain. If they hold it 10 years plus, 100% of the appreciation is fully non-taxable or fully excluded for up to 30 years. Yes, 3-0. And if they invest in rural or small business zones, they get a 30% basis step up instead of 10%. So that's going to be a new hot topic for those companies that are out there specializing in these QOZs, right? Rural or small bonus zones, whatever they do to define those. Plus, the improvement requirement was reduced to 50%. So rehabbing properties in these zones is way more realistic now. There are a couple things that got stricter with eligibility. Puerto Rico no longer gets automatic designation, and you can't do adjacent track stacking. I didn't even know this was a thing, but people were stitching together zones to qualify. Doesn't work. And a big one here, y'all, mandatory IRR reporting. Both the QOF and the investors must now submit detailed IRR, internal rate of return reports. Failure to comply can get you slapped with up to $50,000 in penalties. Translation, document everything. This is not a back of the napkin calculation anymore. And here's a real example, because this gets mixed up in my head. So really fast, let's say you had 1 mil of cap gains in 2027. You reinvest that into a QOF. Normally that would have been tax due immediately of 238K if someone's in the top federal tax bracket. So 20% cap gain plus 3.8% NIIT. But with the QOZ, they defer that tax until 2032. Because they held it for 5 years, they get the 10% basis step up. So now only 900,000 is taxed instead of 1 mil. Their adjusted tax bill goes down to 214K. Meanwhile, the QOF happened to grow 2.5 million by 2037. That's 1.5 million in appreciation, completely tax-free. So they saved, what, almost 30K on original gain plus 380K on the appreciation. After the deferred taxes, they're netting 250K in tax win. This is a huge deal, y'all, right? So make sure that you're paying attention to it, recommending it for clients. It is great. Okay, other individual provisions. The SALT cap, the state and local tax deduction cap, it's been a thorn in the side of high tax states clients since 2018 because we had that 10K cap, right? So here's a special date. A lot of these other dates are not this. So this is really special. 2025 through 2029, the SALT cap increases to 40K. So it quadrupled, which is cool. In 2030 though, the cap reverts back to 10,000 unless Congress steps in again. And this is where the 500K plus really hurt. When you hit the 500K, it starts phasing out. So gradually it'll drop down to the 10K, but there's definitely still planning to be done. This is where advanced tax planning is really gonna shine. Next, the standard deduction is now permanent. So we've got $15,750 for single filers this year. We have $31,500 for married filing joint in 2025. Those are indexed annually, so they'll creep up with inflation. We know our TCJA brackets are here to stay. Yay! So we've got the top rate sticking at 37%. We've got the 0% cap gains rate for our two lowest income tax brackets. That is always a wonderful tax planning opportunity. And the child tax credit got a little bump from $2,000 to $2,200 per child. The refundable portion got expanded and starts to phase in faster. All right, so let's look at our SALT map, SALT cap math, because this is pretty crazy. Credit to Robert Keebler and Andy Whitehair on LinkedIn for deep diving into this one. It's an awesome visual on how just how punishing the SALT cap can be for high earners. So Andy, thank you again for doing this lovely Excel calc. We all love them, right? So on the left, we have a taxpayer with 500K AGI. That's right at the start of the phase out. They still get the full $40,000 SALT deduction if they itemize, right? Combine that with other deductions, it's 75K total itemized. That leaves 425K taxable and a federal tax bill about 117K, right? Now shift one column to the right. We bump their AGI by 100,000 to 600,000. The SALT deduction drops to the full phase out to 10,000. Total itemized shrink to 45K, taxable income jumps to 555K, and federal tax rockets up to 162K. That's a $45,500 increase in tax on only 100K of income. That's a 45.5% marginal tax rate just from losing the SALT deduction. So yes, the cap goes up to 40 temporarily, but as you go over that 500 mark, there is a sharp cliff and you need some major, major advanced planning opportunities. So review your client's AGI projections ASAP. Consider charitable timing, bonus deferrals, pass-through elections, other advanced strategies, and bundle deductions when you can. It's going to be nuanced, but man, you're going to be so helpful. Yes, cat crazy face. But wait, there's more. This one was the hardest to understand, y'all. The harsh new itemized deduction limitation, the 237th cap. This only applies for filers with taxable income over the 37% threshold. So that's 626K about for a single filer. And for joint, that's 751,600 to be precise. So that bumps up the tax for them another 2% effectively, right? So we're not only going from like 45.5%, but we're going up to almost 50% solely in the federal marginal tax rate. No state stuff impacted on this yet. That's going to add to that on top of that. It's crazy, right? So be very careful with that. It's a really crazy little provision, and there's a lot of different ways people are interpreting it online. Just go straight to the tax bill. Well, you know what? I'll add that to our ebook as well, where it exactly tells you how to calculate it and then gives you an example, because it's not quite how you would expect. Other things, real fast. Non-itemizers can deduct $1,000 or $2,000 for charitable cash gifts. That's permanent, starting in 2026. Seniors get an extra $6,000 deduction through 2028. That's for taxpayers 65 and up. Starts phasing out around 75 to 150K. Huge win for lower income workers. If you've got a lot of restaurant workers or even owners, there's ways that you might want to start including more tips in their W-2 income, because it's going to be box one exempt, up to 25K in tips, 12.5K in overtime per spouse can now be income tax exempt. If total AGI is under 150K, single or 300K married filing joint. All right. So here's the effective dates again on those, because they all are kind of all over the board. I wanted you to have that. And here is an exact 237th itemized deduction limit calculation so that you know exactly how to do this. It's actually taking the lesser of total itemized deductions or taxable income plus your itemized deductions back, minus this 37% bracket threshold, and then applying your difference. So in this case, we've got that essentially effective 2% higher federal tax rate. A few other additional provisions, and then we are going to wrap up this area and talk a little bit about tips and tricks and pricing. So, mortgage interest and casualty losses. Mortgage interest is now permanently deductible for loans up to 750K. And yes, casualty losses are back finally. So, if your client's home is hit by a federally declared disaster, they can deduct the loss even without itemizing. Thank goodness. Just remember, no deduction for everyday mishaps or non-declared events. So, we're talking fires, hurricanes, floods, official disasters, which we know, especially here in Texas, there's a lot of that going on right now. And our hearts and our souls go out to those that are dealing with that. We really, really feel for y'all. There are now Trump accounts, baby savings. So it's called the Trump account, and it's babies that are born. This is really specific too. Babies born from 2025 to 2028 get a $1,000 starter contribution from Treasury. Families can add up to $5,000 a year, and employers can pitch in another $2,500. Think of it like a starter Roth IRA for kids. Or I'm sorry, not a Roth. Okay, this is the thing that really matters. People are asking me, is this like a Roth? Is this like a traditional? It's like a traditional, okay? But there's a few differences. So it goes in, it doesn't go in tax-free. You don't get a deduction for your contributions. It grows tax-free, but then it distributes with tax. There is no income requirement, so it does work even for newborns. Contributions are after tax. It grows tax deferred until age 18, and distributions after that are taxable, likely as cap gains or maybe even regular income, depending on future regs. So, no, it is not a Roth. Do not jot down this is like a Roth. It is more like traditional IRA for toddlers, but with no earned income rules. Another thing here, U.S. auto loan interest deduction. is a surprise win for middle-class families. You can now deduct up to $10,000 of interest on new U.S.-only assembled auto loans from 2025 to 2028. It starts phasing out at $250K joint income, so higher income earners, sorry, not for you. But it is a game changer for people that are financing Teslas, Chevys, that U.S. soil stuff, right? Our 529 plans got an upgrade. You can use up to $20,000 a year tax-free for homeschooling and non-traditional programs, coding boot camps, trade schools, you name it. This is huge. I'm so glad for this. So this slide definitely hits some of the most talked about provisions, not the biggest impact by any means, but will be talked about a lot. And here's your effective dates. So be careful with that Trump account. The contributions will start happening mid-2026 towards the 2025 tax year is how I'm interpreting it right now. So hang tight. We'll see again how that comes along. So let's wrap up and talk about how this impacts you as the accountant, the advisor, the bookkeeper, whoever you are is going to bring so much amazing energy and value to the table and ROI for your clients. So we've got a quick cheat sheet here. If you start kind of at the bottom, we've got the business owners, regardless of AGI, should plan for 2025 acquisitions, leveraging 100% bonus depreciation, model R&D deductions, identify QSBS and QOZ eligibility. Those are your very foundational ROI building strategies. Clients earning over $500,000, enter damage control mode and advanced tax planning strategies. SALT deduction phase outs. We've got the AGI where we can do some compression tactics, entity restructuring, deferred comp, tax loss harvesting, and even asset timing to reduce exposure. Your 400 to 500K crowd is where you're in a little bit of a danger zone, right? So you're maybe gonna hit QBI phase outs. You're maybe gonna hit that $500,000 mark. And so you really wanna strategize, reclassify or defer comp, do charitable bunching, things like that. And then your 150 to 400K range, they get most fully everything. There are some things that were phased out at the 150 or 300K mark, like the Trump account, child credit, senior deduction, tip overtime exclusions. So don't miss those, okay? This is where you can really, really shine, y'all. So I hope that was helpful. And then I gave you another little checklist to lock in the new estate tax exemption for clients. What are key planning moves for right now this year? We've got the $15 million for individual, $30 million per couple effective 2026. Urge your high net wealth clients to gift assets, fund grats, slats, islets, review state estate tax cliffs. New York, I think, is approximately $7 million, but I'm in Texas, so correct me if you're in New York and you know. But don't count on this permanent staying permanent, right? It tends to ebb and flow with each presidential election. Exploit, it's a strong word, right? But I want you to remember it. Exploit the five-year only 40K SALT cap, 2025 to 2029. And then you may want to accelerate capital investments and cost segs so that you continue to get that 100% bonus depreciation right away and utilize Section 179 when possible. Reevaluate entity choice. I might do this on every single client because we don't know exactly how it's all going to fall. Leverage tax advantage investments. Calendar the things that are still sunsetting by 2029 for multi-year planning. And then this is the time to educate, outreach, communicate with clients, segment the outreach. You've got your high net wealth, you've got your business owners, you've got your seniors, your tipped workers. Book those 2025 strategy meetings now to project their tax savings for 2025. And then let's bridge this from education to action. Here's how I've seen people very successfully packaging this, especially if you've been giving away tax advice for free or not charging what you should have been. Because the new bill is out, you have no one that's going to question why they would have to pay you for tax planning. Everything's new and different, right? So offer a simple flat fee planning package. You may include one live one-on-one strategy session that's to go over your report and just go over general Q&A. It does not extend after that, okay? Boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. You can give them the year-end tax projection, and you can give them a written report if you like, with maybe assuring you're going to get 5 or 6 plus planning ideas specifically for their income, goals, and the new law. So this gives them clarity on what they owe. They will not be upset at you next year. Awesome. It looks like y'all are liking this. Yay. And it gives you a platform to really showcase your value. You don't have to quote $20,000 up front if you're uncomfortable with that. Start here. Make it 1,000 if you want. Make it 5,000. One of the most successful tax planning firms I know as a Tax Plan IQ user charges a flat $6,000 for a tax plan report, and then they'll upsell implementation packages. And that's what I would do if I was back in my firm again too. And if they are like, well, I want you to help me implement this, you could even credit whatever that flat fee is towards a value priced tax planning implementation package. So you've delivered the flat fee plan, your client sees their projected taxes, handful of strategy ideas. Now's the number to really make an impact. So if you're seeing on that report before you even present to the client, let's say you want to find at least 100% return on investment in the fee that they would pay you versus the tax savings estimated, or maybe you make it 200% plus. That's what I did at Meyer Tax, meaning you're saving $6,000 plus in estimates on a $2,000 plan. You can quote them value priced using my ROI method, which was just mass released with the AICPA to all CPAs. And I'll tell you the origin story real quick. So I created the ROI method over a decade ago in my own firm when I worked with high net wealth, and it helped me triple revenue with over 60% less clients. And then in 2022, I was able to sell my firm for 7 figures with 56 clients because of this methodology and bringing that ROI and tax advisory work to my clients. So very exciting stuff. Please check it out. You can only upsell a client in that 1 hour with them if you get the ROI, right? Does that make sense to everybody? Yeah, I like the claps. I love it. And then that's how you go from a 2K tax plan that's significantly going to help the clients. Do y'all know most accountants do not provide tax projections to clients? It's nuts. Okay. So let them know what they're going to owe next year. It just makes everyone so much happier. There's so much peace of mind. And then you can upsell $10,000, $20,000 plus implementation packages. So that's where Tax Plan IQ can really shine, by automating all of this into like a 3-minute tax plan report presentation, etc. And so I'm excited to hand it over to Dave in just a moment. But remember, tax law changes are where clients need us most, and we are really getting that attention that we've been wanting. So proactively reach out to clients, encourage meetings ASAP to start adjusting estimated taxes or withholdings, get them that projection so there's nothing that's unclear moving forward. But this law really opens a ton of opportunities to save money, adds value to your clients, but only if we act. Okay, so worst case scenario, wait until filing season 2026 to realize these changes, and you're gonna miss out on a ton of stuff. So on that note, I'm gonna let Dave take over the screen, and I want you to make sure that you've compiled all your Q&A into the Q&A box. I'm going to hop over there and start ferociously answering questions while Dave takes over for a really cool opportunity with Tax Plan IQ. So over to you, Dave.